What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Johnny Mack here. Just wanted to give you a heads up that if you are looking for a community that is open to discussion as far as mentorship, conservation, the wild, becoming a better person, and all of that, there is a group for you on Facebook, and it is called Soul Seekers. Soul Seekers, we are all about making ourselves a better person. We're all about making sure hunting lasts for generations to come and encouraging people to get plugged in. Whether you are someone who has something to give or someone who needs to soak it up like a sponge, this is a community for you, and I strongly encourage you that if you're on Facebook to join Soul Seekers, and if you're not on Facebook, hop on there just for that group. It is only going to be as powerful as we all make it. And so just remember that life happens for you. It doesn't happen to you. And that you can't outgive good. You can't outgive good, people. I want you to understand that. And I want you to believe it. Because when we believe that and we lead with courage and we lead with intention, lives are changed. Lives are transformed. Just like on this podcast, Transformation Through Primal Adventure. Be blessed. Enjoy this episode. Talk soon. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Through this podcast, I'm on a mission to transform lives through primal adventure and to spread my mission of mentorship is conservation. This podcast is powered by Washington Backcountry, a resource for all hunters, both new and old. To find out more about Washington Backcountry, go to wabackcountry.com or search for Washington Backcountry on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. The Soulful Hunter Podcast is also proudly presented by the Crazy Elk Company. Based out of the state of Washington with products made in America, they are providing solutions with gear to problems you didn't even know you had. Their tag wallet is one of those solutions, and I had the pleasure of using it on all of my hunts this last year, and it is now a mainstay in my kill kit. The tag wallet is a water-resistant zippered pouch that comes with its own reusable zip ties to safely and securely store your notch tag for quick and easy access. For more information, go to crazyelkcompany.com and use the code SOULFUL with a capital S to save 20% at checkout. Be blessed, everyone, and as always, stay soulful. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soulful Hunter Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack, and today I got a wonderful episode with a repeat guest, and that is Ian Kelbley of Kelbley's Rifles, and he is coming on to talk all about America, freedom, and marksmanship. If you listen to the first episode, we talked all about Kelbley's Rifles and what makes a rifle special, what makes it custom, what makes it accurate, and all the different things going into it. Well, I invited Ian to come back on to talk about marksmanship and everything America. So, Ian, thank you so much, brother, for coming on and joining me for another episode.
Heck yeah. Well, thanks for having me back, Johnny. It was a blast last time. Expecting it to be a blast this time.
Man. Hey, when a couple of Patriots get together and share some conversation, then you know it's always going to be good, and it's always going to lead to great things. So thank you, brother. How's life back east?
Oh, it's good, man. We're starting to roll into winter. Everybody's out hunting right now, so it's a good time, you know?
Oh, yeah. How's that? What is it? The ships that are all stuck off the coast. I'm totally drawing a blank. The supply chain. Oh, dude, how's the supply chain issue affecting you guys where you're at?
Well, we just set a new Mazak vertical mill yesterday that was supposed to be here on September 16th. And that thing was built and made in Kentucky and had to come up to Ohio. And it was a month and a half late.
Oh, jeez. So,
you know, everything's kind of up in the air right now as far as supply chain goes. Luckily, we pre-buy a lot of our materials and everything like that. So, you know, as long as the mills hold true, we'll be fine on material and everything. But we're definitely starting to see it in, secondary suppliers and stuff, like people that make the smaller parts that we need for our receivers and everything. A lot of that small stuff will farm out to smaller job shops and stuff like that. And they're starting to feel the the material issues, especially those guys that are doing custom work and stuff, you know, doing one off or, you know, 3, 4, 5 parts. So, you know, it's getting a lot harder for them to find raw material. I heard a little hoopla that just chrome and nickel is only coming out of China right now because they're the only ones that are still mining it currently.
Interesting.
So I don't know how true that is, but, you know, anymore, what do you hear that is true?
Ain't that the truth? What can you actually believe? And I think that just goes, that really goes to show, like, it's time for people to get in tune with their own gut and to, you know, they always say in the education world, trust your gut instinct, right? You go with whatever you think is the correct answer the first time, because when you second guess yourself, you typically are wrong when you're marking answers on a test. And so it's like, you know,
well, what's crazy too is, you know, I mean, we just keep selling more and more, whether it be, you know, just rifle actions, or we're selling more stocks now and full rifle builds. And we're sitting there going, man, where are people getting ammo for this stuff right now? You know, we definitely expected to see like a steady decline in sales. So we were a little hesitant on getting new machines and stuff. But, you know, we had a couple of weeks where it was a little slow. And the last 3, 4 weeks has just been off the charts, man.
Wow.
All over again. So,
well, I've been nickel and diming every single chance I can to find my hunting ammo. And I'm like, you know,
I was looking for some 300 PRC, found some online the other day for $143 a box. And I was like, yeah, I don't need that bad, bad.
You know, it's so funny. It's like, if you open up my gun safe, I have 3 different 6.5 Creedmoors in there. And a lot of people back when I was, you know, it was a couple years ago, I was looking at rifles and stuff, and they're like, well, why don't you mix up your calibers? And I was like, well, because I want to be able to have ammo for all my guns. And if I constantly am buying different calibers, I have to buy a lot of different ammunition to be able to supplement that gun. If not, I'm not going to ever be shooting it. And so it's like, whew, you know, I got a different one. You know, your sand wedge is not just your all-time wedge. You gotta be able to mix it up a little bit.
Well, on the whole marksman topic, think about this. You know, the old adage is fear the man with one rifle.
Ooh.
You know?
That is a great quote.
We see people all the time building multiple different calibers. I've shot the same competition caliber since 2012.
Yeah.
In 2 different disciplines now. And, you know, it makes it really nice because I sit there, if I have anything off with my data, like, you know, throws a red flag in my brain. I'm like, wait, that's off, you know, because I just know the one cartridge really well. So you don't run into the issues of, well, my Kestrel said this, so it must be true. And then you miss. You sit there and you go, ah, that seems really far off. Let's see what I plugged in here wrong.
Dude, see, and now you're talking language that some people who are listening to this podcast might not even know what you're talking about. So let's dive into this. Let's dive into this world of marksmanship. So before we even talk about long range, in which you might even need a Kestrel, let's go through the basis of what makes a good marksman and what are some tangible takeaways that listeners can start applying today at the range. If they are going to the range, they can be like, okay, I'm going to focus on these 3 things and go from there. Where's your foundation of shooting at when it comes to accuracy?
Man, it's all a little different for everyone, but I think it really starts, you know, like, let's say if you're sighting in a deer rifle off of a bench, you know, it really comes down to repeatability. Am I on the rifle the same way every time? You know, is my cheek in the same spot so that my eyes position behind the scope the exact same way every time? Am I on the rifle the same way so that way when, you know, I follow through and feel recoil, is it hitting me in the shoulder the exact same way every single time? That's honestly the biggest fundamental errors that I see with newer shooters is they constantly break cheek weld, you know, to cycle the bowl or load another round. You know, they don't get back on the rifle the same way. They don't find a comfortable position. Another thing that can translate into is called resting point of aim. So what resting point of aim would be is when you get behind your rifle and you line up on the target, close your eyes, take a breath, and open your eyes back up, and you look through your optic, and you keep repeating that over to make sure that you're not moving that rifle by just closing your eyes and taking a breath. And what that allows you to find is your comfortable position behind that rifle. And if you're in a position where you open your eyes back up after closing them and taking a breath, and you're way off target, you know that's not a good position for you to be in, because you're not behind the rifle in a comfortable manner that's going to be repeatable for accuracy. Other big things for marksmanship is we see a lot of people slap triggers. One of the worst things you can do as like a newer shooter is to go to that hair trigger, is what people call it. You know, setting the trigger up so light that you don't have a pull on your finger on that trigger. And we see that a lot more in like competition style shooting, where light triggers are very popular. And what you'll notice is people actually they slap the trigger with their finger instead of squeezing through the trigger shoe. And that's another big thing. So there's a lot of people out there now that run no over travel on triggers and everything like that. And man, old school, you know, accuracy shooting, you want that over travel on the trigger, so that way you can continue squeezing through recoil. And that way you're not inducing cant onto the rifle then.
Do you shoot archery at all?
I mean, I got a Limb Saver Speed Zone, old school bow, but still works well for me.
Dude, a Limb Saver? That's a state of Washington bow, brother. Way to go. Way to represent the West Coast.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I ended up with it. We were actually working with another guy that was doing a lot of hunting. It was almost a decade ago now. And I had sent him some gear, and I got a package back, and it was a daggone whole bow, because he got a new one. And he was like, here, use this, man. I've been using it ever since. But, you know, I just use a daggone simple wrist release.
Okay.
You know, and it's kind of the same principle. I think I know where you're going with it. You know, if you're not in a comfortable position behind your compound bow, you know, you're going to induce cant onto the bow itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And so what I was going to go with is this. So when I got into archery a couple years ago, my archery shop down in Aberdeen, Washington, Matt Schmitz, awesome dude, he was talking to me about releases, because being a gun guy, I was like, oh dude, I want to have a good release. I want it to be like a trigger on a gun where, you know, it's consistent and it's not going to be a bunch of extra pressure and unneeded travel and all that. He's like, I totally get it. Here's what you want. And he was talking to me about putting my finger on the trigger, and he's like, you can feel how you can kind of pop it a little bit and it's not moving at all. But is so you can really rest your finger on there, and then you're pulling with your shoulder blade and that finger is naturally coming with you. The point of what I'm saying is that goes with the hair trigger thing, is that people think that they have to just constantly like smack it to let it go, but it's actually nice when you have it not be such a hair trigger, so that you can actually feel comfortable and confident behind the gun. And I think it shows up for a lot more repeatability. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. It's the same principle there. You know, you want continued movement. If you're going to move a part of your body in any type of marksmanship, you want that continued movement through that arrow or that projectile when it leaves whatever piece of equipment you're using. You want to be following that same movement so that you have that repeatability.
Mm. Yeah, and then the other thing that really was very interesting that I didn't realize. So I missed a shot on a black bear in 2020. It was about a 140-yard shot uphill at like a steep angle. And I was kneeling down, shooting off a bipod. And I missed, and I was like, I can't believe I missed what I would consider a chip shot for myself. But then I showed my buddy the shot, and he's like, dude, that's a really tough shot. And I think now hearing this conversation with you and talking about marksmanship, I think I specifically missed because I wasn't comfortable behind the rifle the way I normally would be if I was laying prone, shooting offhand, or doing whatever I was. The way the hill was steep, shooting up at an angle, I couldn't get my body behind the gun. And so that is specifically why I believe I missed on that bear now.
Oh, 100%. I mean, it's one of the toughest things is going through all the practice and all the ammunition you're going to go through, or all the times you're going to shoot your bow, trying to put yourself in awkward positions to be accurate in those awkward positions. Some of the most simple looking stuff, like what you said, you thought it was just a little chip shot, but you know, to somebody experienced, they're sitting there going, man, if you're a newer shooter or a newer hunter, that's going to be really difficult to make that shot because you are uncomfortable. You know, you're sitting there, you're not realizing how much you're inducing cant onto that rifle. And I'd be willing to bet that you probably, after you shot that round, your rifle was probably tilted to the right.
I would imagine so.
If you're in an awkward position, you're going to start inducing cant with the palm of your hand because you're going to grip the rifle a lot tighter than what you normally would. You're going to try to suck it into your shoulder more. And, you know, you're going to try to drive the rifle more than what you really need to.
Interesting. So when it comes to grounding yourself for shooting, especially for hunting purposes, not necessarily bench rest competitions, when you're sighting in a rifle, do you think it's best to sight it in prone or sitting at a bench behind it? Because I feel like I can never actually shoulder the gun the way I really want to if I'm sitting at a bench at a gun range with a bunch of other people, and it just doesn't feel 100% natural. Do you ever come across that?
So we always tell customers or friends or whoever we're talking to about it at that time that you want to sight your rifle in and you want to shoot your rifle for accuracy, how you're going to use it. If you go and throw your hunting rifle that you're going to be spotting and stalking with, so you're probably going to end up shooting it off shooting sticks, off a tree limb, you know, just freehand standing, you know, type shots.
Yep.
That's how you want to shoot it and sight it in. And the reason being is you can run into issues with harmonics of the rifle. So say you're spot stock hunting and that's what you're intending that rifle for. Well, you throw it into a lead sled that's sandbagged down on top of a concrete bench. That rifle is going to vibrate totally different than when you actually have it up in your hands.
Yep.
When I sight in a hunting rifle, I typically lay prone with a bipod in the ground. I'm looking for ways to minimize as much vibrations as possible. You know, because if you're shooting a rifle offhand, it's not going to vibrate that much, you know, because through your body, your body's going to absorb those vibrations.
Yep.
If you throw the stock up on the side of the tree, that gun's going to vibrate a lot more than, you know, you just shooting it offhand. So I think shooting a bipod in the dirt is going to give you kind of the best of both worlds. It's going to give you a little bit of vibration dampening, but at the same time, it's going to give you a little more rigid platform to shoot off of.
Okay.
So, you know, bench rest rifles, I always shoot them, you know, off of sandbags on the bench. Any of my hunting or my tactical rifles, or anything I intend to shoot off a bipod, I always shoot it prone on the dirt. So that way it's as close to what it's going to be as possible.
Man, that makes a ton of sense. And I hope, hopefully a lot of people are listening to this and taking notes, because that is some wisdom right there. Now, going back to the trigger, is there any specific way you like to keep your finger on the trigger? Is it like, do you think of it as more of a straight pullback or a curl of your finger? Or what do you think about this? Or is that a repeatability issue?
It really depends on the rifle, right? So my competition rifle, I have a thumb rest on the side of it. So that way my thumb's never wrapped around the grip of the rifle. It's never wrapped around, you know, the rear tang of the action or anything like that. It's always on the right-hand side of my rifle, and my hand's vertically up and down with my fingers just touching the grip.
Yep.
Now, with, you know, say an 8-pound 300 Win Mag that I'm out hunting with a more traditional type grip to it, so it's more angled back, your hand's more, it's more horizontal than it is vertical, right?
Yep.
Your finger's gonna come into that trigger a little different. So all I'm looking to do, no matter what type of rifle I'm shooting, I want my finger to pull as straight back as possible and one continuous motion. So, you know, if you have a vertical grip, you know, using a traditional 90-degree type trigger pull can work for you. If you're shooting more of a traditional style hunting rifle, you know, you're going to be reaching for that trigger a little more on a traditional style hunting rifle than you would on a modern day, you know, PRS or even bench rest style rifle.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on the platform that you're using. You know, if you feel like you're reaching all the way to the tip of your finger, you know, you have an issue with length of pull for you. Or, you know, the length between the grip and the trigger itself. So I always try to get the center of my pointer finger pad on the center of the trigger shoe.
Mm.
And if I can get that, I know I'm going to get a good squeeze on the trigger.
Okay.
You know, if it's too far, like if you're down into the second knuckle or in the crease between, you know, the crease of your first knuckle, you're going to run into issues where you're not going to get a consistent squeeze on that trigger. So, you know, finding a way to make that rifle comfortable and your finger on the trigger feel comfortable is going to be key on that one.
Mm.
And, you know, if you're just getting started out, nobody cares what your rifle looks like as long as it does the job. You know, if you got to build the thing up with a little bit of a tape so that way your hand goes a little closer to the trigger, you know, nobody's gonna laugh at you for it. I mean, you know, some people may, but as long as it's serving a purpose to make you a better marksman, you know, you can redneck the snot out of your rifle if you need to.
Yeah, that is such an interesting concept, is that, yeah, it's a one size fits all. So do shoes fit you the best if they're one size fits all, or do you want to be a better shooter and have it fit perfectly to you? That makes total sense when you're even if it says take some tape and wrap it around to give yourself a little bit more of a boost. That's great advice. Great advice.
I mean, it's like, you know, like regular shoes compared to custom shoes, you know, I'd walked out of tons of boots over the years, you know, whether it be hunting or just at the shop on concrete floors, you know, so investing in a good custom piece of gear is a huge help to everyone. And that's why you see so many different stock companies out there. I mean, there are so many direct replacements for whether it be a Tika, a Savage, even Bergara, or, you know, whether it comes down to custom rifles as well, you know, it's all the same. The reason why there's such a big stock business is because people are looking for that comfort, the ergonomics behind their rifle.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of like a tilt steering wheel in a car. Nobody's going to sit in the same spot or have the same, you know, torso height or anything, you know, so you got to make stuff somewhat adjustable. And that's kind of why you see the rise of all these chassis now too, because of how just modular they are and how ergonomic you can make them.
Which then leads to why people are hunting with guns like those also now.
Yep.
Because if someone's that confident and comfortable behind a gun, why not just use it in the field also pursuing animals, especially if you can make the shot at a longer distance if need be. That makes total sense. Okay.
Well, and then you get into the whole humane argument as well. You know, the more comfortable you are behind the rifle, the better marksman you are, the more humane hunter you are.
Right.
You know, because nobody likes injuring an animal. I mean, that's like the worst feeling in the world, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. So here's one of the things that came to mind is, so using your Coda rifle this year has been an absolute blast. Has been great. So much fun shooting it, sighting it in. I've yet to kill a big game animal, but was able to smoke a coyote on our deer hunt in October. And really looking forward to laying something big down with that rifle soon. Now, what I noticed on the stock that it came in is that for the bolt to be able to be removed, it has a little indent so that you can actually get the bolt all the way out on the backside of the stock.
Yep.
Now, this last year, Graybo of Graybo Stocks came out with a brand new stock specifically tailored towards hunters, called the Phoenix, which I have the stock. I think it's awesome, but now that I understand guns and stocks a whole lot more, they totally screwed the pooch on one specific thing, and that is because it has an adjustable cheek, adjustable comb, it doesn't allow you to remove the bolt without adjusting the comb height. And if you're talking about repeatability, that becomes a huge issue.
So what we've seen a lot of people do in a situation like that, right, is they will make a spacer that goes on the cheek riser bar to make it repeatable like that.
Okay.
Or, you know, they'll make Sharpie lines on it, you know, just some point of reference to put it back in as close to the same spot as possible.
Gotcha.
Now, things you'll notice, like with the new rifle we just released the video on yesterday. Yeah, yesterday was the Nanook MG rifle we just came out with. And that has a folding stock on it for the sole reason, the first reason, let me say, of being able to remove the bolt because it's a long action.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to have to adjust the cheek piece every time. And that's something that myself as a consumer as well as a builder, I cannot stand is having to move my cheek piece to remove the bolt. So not only does it help with, you know, packing the rifle, flying with the rifle, whatever you're doing, it also helps you get the bolt out of the rifle without having to touch your cheek adjustment.
Yes. Okay. Man, you're holding it down, brother. I didn't even think about putting like marks on my risers to be like, okay, this is where I have it at every single time. Dude, maybe.
Oh man, I put them on my scopes too. Like when I first set up a rifle, you know, if it's a high recoiling rifle, you know, whether it be a Magnum or, you know, just a big bore rifle, and I mount a new scope on it, I actually put Sharpie marks on the scope right at the front edge of the rings, into the recoil. So that way, if my scope's sliding, I can actually tell if it's sliding because my marks will disappear into the rings.
Mm, interesting.
How
often do you get scopes that slide?
As I've gotten into this more and more, I mean, in June, it'll be 15 years now at the family business since I got out of college and high school and stuff. But it, I mean, when I first started getting into it, I saw it myself personally a lot more. We see it with customers quite a bit. You know, especially when they're mounting a high end scope, they don't want to crush the scope tube. So they're real gentle on the screws at first, which, you know, always make sure that you torque everything down to what the manufacturers say to do because they've gone through the testing of it. But, you know, there's just some rifles you kind of got to torque stuff maybe just a touch more, you know, a couple couple inch pounds more than what was stated to you to make sure they don't slide. Mm-hmm. Little tricks that I do as well is like on the inside of my scope rings, I'll actually how to explain this. So if you're looking from the buttstock to the front of the rifle, I'll actually perpendicularly make sandpaper marks inside of my rings, you know, against recoil. So that way you get a little extra bite on the scope there.
Mm, interesting. Yeah. Okay. Man, look at that. Okay, so these are all great, great things to know and for people to add to. We've talked about the stock. We've talked about positioning behind the rifle and behind the scope. We talked about grip and the trigger. What are just maybe a couple other things that people might not be thinking about when it comes to marksmanship?
Having a good rear bag is huge. It's critical. I see a lot of guys shoot off their fists. I see a lot of people with their bipods adjusted too high, so that they're in an uncomfortable position. They're almost like reaching their neck up into the air to get on the rifle. You know, like for anything that I'm shooting prone, I run like a Harris 6 to 9 inch bipod. Mm. And with that being said, it may not be the best bipod for hunting, but you know, the investment of, you know, $100 bipod or $150 bipod is crucial for prone shooting, load development, you know, just sighting your rifle in so that way you're comfortable when prone. Getting yourself a good bag, whether it be, say like a, oh man, like a protector, rear bag, a leather bag with the ears on top of it, or just a good flat bag that you can scrunch up and manipulate a little bit to get it to fit the contour of your stock. That's something that's very crucial. And another thing you can test with resting point of aim is that your bipod and your bag setup is solid enough that you can pick your head up off the stock, and then when you look right back through the scope, it hasn't moved on target. You know, that's going to help with recoil as well. So if you have a bag that's, you know, cockeyed to the target and stuff like that, it's actually going to force the rifle over one way or another. And that's going to hurt your accuracy as well. So you definitely want to find a good bag that you enjoy shooting off of. I have bags from Tab Gear. I have bags from WeBad, bags from Short Action Precision, Protector, you know, Edgewood. We have bags from all of them, and they're all great bags, but each one serves its purpose. You know, I'm not going to use a 8-inch tall bag for shooting prone. You know, that's more for arm support and, you know, PRS NRL type competition.
Yep.
Or that may be something I carry hunting because I know I'm going to want some arm support, you know, if I got to shoot off of a tree or shoot standing or something like that, you know.
Yep.
And they work really well as nice little soft seats as well while you're out hunting too.
What's a bag that you would consider to be lightweight and good enough to take into the backcountry? If someone's backpacking into the mountains and they plan on shooting out to 500 yards potentially, maybe longer on an animal, what's one that's lightweight enough and comfortable enough but is durable enough to hold up the job?
I will say my absolute favorite bag to this day for usability and also adaptability is a Short Action Precision run and gun bag. The reason why I say that, it comes with a flush cup attachment. The bag weighs less than, I think it's like maybe 10 ounces, something like that. So it's got real lightweight fill. It's made of Cordura. On one side, it's got the anti-skid material on it. So you can put it on the bottom of the fore end of your rifle. So like, say if I am shooting off of a tree or something like that, it's got two clips on it that I can slide it right over my barrel, right over the fore end of my rifle. and shoot right off of a tree. It's also got the flush cup, you know, the push button flush cup sling swivel on it that you can, you pop right into the back of your, the butt stock of your rifle. So that way, you know, it's always attached to your rifle. It's like, I think it's like 3 or 4 inches tall and maybe like 6 or 8 inches wide. So not only can you use it just laying flat, but you can stand it up on end. You can use the two bands on it that you can slide over your barrel. You can cinch those up real tight, so that way it sucks all the fill real tight together and gives you a little extra elevation out of it. I mean, that bag is like my favorite bag of all times. I use it all the time.
Okay.
I mean, I use it so much that I probably got to send it back to him to have the fill replaced in it.
I'm going to have to take a look into this bag, because that sounds like something I need to actually add to my collection and get more practice with. I do want to say it was really interesting hearing you talk about a 6x9 Harris bipod for shooting prone, which that is like ultimate simple prone bipod. However, those of you listeners who hunt the mountains, a 6x9 is going to be too short for you to get good angles uphill and downhill. Yes. And so a 9-13 is like ideal for that. I don't have a 9-13, so I carry a 13-24 on my gun, which is, I don't ever use the second legs. I usually just keep it right on the 13. But that is a piece of advice for all you listeners out there as to what length of bipod do I need when I'm shooting uphill and downhill in the mountains. So super important.
Yeah, mind you, I mean, when we go to competitions, I have 2 or 3 bipods with me. You know, I have a short one, and I used to carry 3 bipods. Now I have my short 6-9 Harris, and then I have my SkyPod from MDT, and one of our good friends, Sky Thomas, designed that a few years ago, and that's a really adaptable Western style bipod. And the reason why I say Western style is, you know, on the East Coast here in Ohio and stuff like that, we don't have the massive verticality. We don't have, you know, the rocks and the scrub that people out West do, you know? So it's not something that is ever really needed here in Ohio for any of the shooting we do around here. But man, I love going out West and shooting all the field matches and stuff. So it really comes in handy out there.
I love it. Dude, Ian, I love chatting with you. By the way, while you were telling me about the folding stock of your new Nanook rifle.
Oh, I heard the video.
I was like, oh, I see that beard. Look at that man. Just grew it out. You look so savage with that, brother.
You know what's funny is actually a local company here is guys on YouTube by the name of the Bearded Butchers, and their boys actually play on the same football team that my son does, and those guys have big long beards too, and it cracks me up. We always end up yakking at the football games and stuff, you know. And they actually just went out West on an elk hunt and just had a successful elk hunt. So congrats to those guys on that.
That is so awesome. That is so awesome. Okay, so you just dropped some serious knowledge when it came to accuracy and marksmanship. So you talked about comfortability, being comfortable behind your rifle. And that has to do with like the stock shape and how you are consistently. You talked about the trigger pull. You talked about the rear bag. Is there any other like real key tips that you'd say, all right, make sure you got this dialed in before you take off?
Not all ammo is equal.
Say that again for the people in the back.
Yeah, not all ammo is equal. I'm not saying it's not a dig on manufacturers or anything like that. Each barrel, each rifle is going to like its own specific bullet is going to be the most accurate in it, or it's going to like its own specific load that's going to be the most accurate in it. Accuracy comes from harmonics of the rifle. So a barrel actually, trying to remember, I think it's a transverse wave. It almost looks like waves in an ocean when you shoot a barrel. So up and down waves. One thing is a rifle, why people call it rifle tuning is because you're actually tuning the harmonics of that rifle. That barrel, if the load is wrong for that barrel, will actually settle out in a different point of impact every time. So that muzzle will actually settle down and settle in a different position every time if the load is out of tune. And when you find a load that is in tune, that barrel is going to vibrate the same way every time, and the muzzle is going to return to the same point of impact. So that is a key thing, is finding good ammo that works in your rifle. And you can also see lot-to-lot variations, because as manufacturers are loading the ammo, you know, they're going to get into different lots of bullets. They're going to get into different lots of brass, different lots of primers. And the big one is different lots of powder. And powder can vary because it is a chemical process to make powder. So it's something that can vary. It doesn't vary as much as it used to, you know, just because of the, you know, efficiency of manufacturing that we see now. But it's something that can change for sure. You know, you can notice between one box of ammo to the next of the same manufacturer, you know, the same bullet weight and everything, you can see, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 foot a second difference in the ammo. And, you know, it's no fault of the manufacturer. It's just, that's just how ammunition works. So one big thing, like if you look at rimfire shooters, when they find a lot of ammo that works well for their competition rimfire rifles, they will buy, we know people that literally buy pallets of that ammo because they know that they're not going to find something better than that. And they're at a disadvantage if they run out of that ammo and they can't find it anymore. So a big thing is, you know, if you find a good lot of ammo and, you know, your local ammunition store, your local, you know, gun store, whatever, or the online retailer that you buy from, if they have a lot of it, you know, buy what you can afford. You know, if you know you're going to go on 3-4 hunting trips this year, and you know you're going to shoot, you know, 100, 150 rounds of practice before that, you know, buy 400 or 500 rounds of ammo so that way you have it. And that way next year you don't have to go through as much with sighting the rifle in and all that as well. most competition shooters that have been in it a while will have 2 years of ammo on hand, whether it just be the components to load ammunition. But they're never going to run out of ammo middle of the season, because that is like the worst situation you can be in. It's trying to find a load with new components.
Right.
You know, if you can afford it, buy a couple hundred rounds of that ammo. Right now, I know it's like pulling a mortgage to do so, but you know,
well, you're also,
it's a lot better than a missed animal. That's for sure.
That, and you're also investing in your freedom, not just your hobby right now. I feel like lead is becoming a precious metal these days, and it's something that you're never going to wish. It's like a gun. When you don't have it, you're always going to wish you had it. And when you had it, you're glad that you don't need to use it, if that's the case.
I mean, my goodness, you know, retirement accounts did great in 2020. Let's not lie. But primer stock, man, if you had stock of primers, you're like sitting, what the heck is it now, like 8 or 10 fold? On your money.
Wow.
On primers, you know. We just got back from recently from a dealer distributor show, and we were talking to some ammunition companies, and their distributor pricing on ammo is like what we saw like 2 years ago as like retail price.
Oh no.
You know, so it's scary, because you start looking at ammo, and you know, you start talking to these companies, and they're like, we could not take an order for the next year or two and not even bat an eye at it, because we have so much back ordered. You know, so it's tough for them, just because, you know, finding components and stuff like that's very difficult right now.
Dude, that's brutal. Well, brother, listen, we could keep this going on forever, and I think I actually already have some follow-up questions for you. Like, next episode, I want to get into, like, what is a ladder test, and why is that so important for the harmonics of a barrel and all that? But I feel like, just for the sake of keeping this wrapped up, we do such a great job on these episodes that you and I could, if we recorded in person, I'm sure this episode would go, like, 3 hours long.
That short.
Right. Bro, thank you so much. Everybody go check out Kelbley Rifles. You can go to kelbleyrifles.com, I believe. Kelbley.com, dude. Blow it up right there. And if you guys really want to get your hands on a really nice rifle, go buy one of theirs. But also, December 11th, Ian was so kind and gracious enough to donate one of his custom actions up to $1,500 in value, and you can come win that by supporting the first responders here in the state of Washington by auctioning. We're going to do that. That's going to be a silent auction item. Is that whoever wants to bid on that can walk away with that certificate that night. And Ian, do you want to talk a little bit about what type of actions they could actually get if they want to go bid on this?
So that was a pretty open gift certificate we sent for that one. So what we wanted to do was give anybody that bid on that silent auction and actually won it the ability to choose any of our receivers. So whether it be one of our entry level Atlas actions all the way up to one of our competition actions, you can go with one of those. So whether your passion is just general hunting and shooting, the Atlas or the Prometheus would be great for you. If you're looking to build like a sheep rifle, our new ultralight Nanook action would be a great option for you. If you're wanting to look into short range bench rest, long range bench rest, F class, our Panda actions are a great choice, or even our Golden Bears. So you can literally get any of our actions out there, whether it be from a 223 Remington style action all the way up to a 338 Lapua style action. And, other things too, you don't even have to buy our rifles. We make awesome scope rings. Then on a well-aligned base, you don't have to do any lapping. We make self-timing muzzle brakes all the way from a 750 diameter up to inch 250 diameter. And all of our accessories, whether it be our scope rings, our muzzle brakes, things like that, are all very affordable. Less than $200 for that type of stuff. Our muzzle brakes are like $100 each. So, definitely something that, if you just have a standard factory rifle that, you just want to throw some, better equipment on, then we have those options for you as well.
Man, on your website, I'm looking at that Nanook action. Hot dog. That sucker is so sweet looking.
Well, what I was going to say about that Nanook MG rifle, what's funny about accuracy, so on that rifle weighs 7 pounds, 14 and a half ounces, right? Mm-hmm. And I had a March scope on top of it. So that thing's like 24 ounces. So, we're sitting like under 10 pounds on a 300 PRC, right?
Yeah.
I'm literally sitting there watching my heartbeat move my reticle at 100 yards. So that was something where I had to shoot with like a leather dual ear bag. I put my big heavy bipod on it for testing loads, just because the rifle's so light for being able to go in and out of areas that it was like, holy cow, I can see my heartbeat moving the reticle here. So I'm going to need to tame this down a little bit somehow, So that's another thing too. If you're new in this, add a little weight to your rifle. It definitely helps out with getting your fundamentals dialed in as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. Ian, it is always a pleasure, brother. Thank you so much for joining for another episode, and I can't wait to continue this on. Once again, I can't wait to get you out here to hunt here in the state of Washington or out west somewhere, wherever that may be, brother. But thank you so much, man. This is a great episode, and I can't wait for everyone to listen to it. everybody, go check out KelbyRifles.com. Go check out all their actions, all their rifles that you can go with. Don't forget to come to our December 11th event, and you are going to have a great time as we build community, support our local first responders, and at the same time, build that community of mentorship as conservation. I'm Johnny Mack. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. Freedom on, everybody, and stay soulful. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love it if you could go ahead and give this a rating as well as subscribe. Also, you can check us out on Instagram under the Soulful Hunter Podcast. Make sure to tag us in pictures and posts and use the hashtag Soulful Hunter. To find out more about the Soulful Hunter Podcast, go to soulfulhunter.com and be sure to follow the podcast as we are going to be bringing you a lot of great information, insight, and changing lives through primal adventure. I look forward to connecting with you on the next episode. Stay tuned and stay soulful.